You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 112, a very special Legion podcast crossover.
And welcome to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 112. I'm Paul French, and today I am Red Wine Lad. I think that's fairly self-explanatory.
It is.
So yeah. Snooty.
Well, the beer store was closed when I was on my way home today, so.
Ah, fair enough.
Yeah, I got stuck working for the weekend, so. Yeah.
Well, everybody's working for the weekend, right? Yeah.
Exactly. I know I did.
There you go. There you go. So that's me this week.
Wonderful. I am Darren Noel, and I am Stuffed Boy because I made stuffing for Thanksgiving, you dirty-minded heathen. Oh, my God. What are y'all thinking?
Jesus. I thought you just had a good weekend. Jeez.
Well, we'll see. Timey-wimey, right?
Wibbly-wobbly, right on. You will have had a good weekend.
I will have had a good weekend at some point. In the past, that hasn't happened yet. Okay.
I'm Matt Kramer, and this week it seems like multiple other weeks in the past, I'll be Challengers kid again, because this Friday, Amy Reeder at Challengers in Chicago.
Awesome. Is that this Friday or this Friday last Friday?
December 4th.
Does not compute.
Whatever.
Check your chrono viewers for details.
Exactly.
I am so jealous.
That's really cool. She's awesome.
Oh, it's going to be awesome.
Cool. I like
it's
her.
A signing, and I believe it's the first exhibit at the Rogues Gallery.
Oh, cool.
Which is the comic art gallery attached to Challengers.
Yeah, I want to go to that one day. It's on my Chicago list.
So. One day.
One day
that
more.
One day, one day. Because
she's been tearing it up on her Supergirl covers. It's very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are cool.
I'm upset Madame Xanadu got canceled. So there you go.
Did it really?
It's true. Yeah.
Bummer. Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of running it out. I think 29 comes out, will have come out last weekend or last week. And
confusing.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead, Scott.
And I'm Scott Coles, and tonight I am Farewell Lad. This is my last Legion podcast. Because I'm sure you guys are going to replace me with Adriana as soon as possible.
What?
Did I have you worried for a second?
A little bit.
She had me going. I'm like, almost. What the heck?
Yeah. I was going to cry and stuff too, but I thought, no, I just put a little too much
you.
On her.
That's not you.
I don't cry about stuff. No way, man.
Just drink more.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of which.
Drink.
Scotchy. Okay.
So we have a guest with us. And as you may have guessed, we have a girl on the show.
If you are a detective of any sort whatsoever, you may have deduced. If you're in the running for the new Batman in Batman Inc.
Well, who isn't?
The lovely and talented Adriana Ferguson. Ferguson, is that correct?
Ferguson, yes.
Yay.
And of course, Adriana comes from the Super Future Friends podcast.
Yes, I'm visiting. Hello, thank you for having me on.
Oh, we're glad to have you on.
You rival
Christmas
indeed.
Ill and working, so it's a horrible combination. It's like doubly cannot be here because she's diseased.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Diseased.
So why don't you? You know, I think there's a lot of people actually who listen to both shows. But for those who don't, why don't you tell them a little bit about Super Future Friends?
Super Future Friends is like the kind of juvenile version of this podcast.
Wow.
Wow, that's saying something.
We were the juvenile version of this podcast.
I thought we were the juvenile version of this podcast. Wait a minute. Like,
people will ask us a lot of questions about, like, well, what about this? Like, where does this happen? And where does this happen? We're like, we don't know. Ask the Legion of Substitute podcast. And so really, I feel like we're the substitute podcasters a lot of the time.
Oh, you're the subs auxiliary.
Yeah.
The auxiliary brand.
Nice.
I'm picturing Zendak doing his face palm.
We summarize the issues of the Legion. You guys do summaries too, which
absolutely.
I think
a little bit, yeah.
That's all right. We do every single appearance that we can get our hands on. They have to have like some kind of active role in the issue for us to do it. They can't just show up and be in the background somewhere. They have to like say something.
Uh-huh.
Our usual thing. It's like they have to say something and then they can be in the issue that we cover. And then we just basically
Summarize. Right, so you do a lot of like the Superboy issues that we don't cover because they're not full Legion. Oh, that's cool.
It'll be like the ones where some nonsense is going on, and at the very end, you find a Legionnaire was behind it.
I remember that story.
Which happens like 700 stories.
Seriously,
seriously,
that is rich territory to mine.
Yeah. Lex Luthor says the substitute villains might exist.
Right.
Exactly. Oh my! Exactly. All right.
I like to think that your podcast is what it would be if, like, I was doing a show all by myself, except for there was a clone of me who is also a girl like me.
And that is why cloning is illegal.
All right,
but the dots around the universe.
It's probably another one of those things that they'll just legalize up here, because why not?
Oh, that's true. I'm so disappointed in California, can I tell you? They totally did not live up to their reputation again.
Yes.
Shocking.
I know.
Well, not really, but...
Yeah.
No, I've stopped being shocked by anything that goes on in your country.
Really?
You guys are...
When Iowa is more progressive than California, you have a problem.
When Iowa is more progressive than anywhere, you have a problem.
Yes, and I say that as someone from Iowa.
There you go.
I know.
That's what I want. I want a cornfield wedding right now, Matt.
Matt's already married, Darren. I'm sorry.
Oh, not to him.
Ooh, hey.
I figure if he's Iowan, he could like find a reverend or something. He's got to know people up there. Come on, that's his stick.
Right on. Oh dear.
Exactly. So how did you get into the Legion, Adriana?
Okay, there's two different stories. There's one story of how I actually started liking the Legion, and then there's one story of my first experience with the Legion, which was not good.
Oh, okay, let's start there. Yeah.
This is like the story about losing your virginity and sex.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah,
losing
yeah.
the virginity was awful, but having sex later was great. Okay.
So, the Teen Titans... When Geoff Johns sort of restarted the Teen Titans with the new lineup of, like, I don't know, 2000-something,
mm-hmm.
I was reading that because I was really into the Teen Titans cartoon. I was like, I'll read this. Sure, awesome. And I read it, and it was pretty – I really liked it. And then at a certain volume, these jerks show up, these people. I have no idea who they are. And they – and – you have to understand that if you don't know who the Legion are, being just sort of thrown into them is like a nightmare. First of all, they kidnap Superboy. Not really. I mean, he just kind of gets sucked into a thing. Superboy's gone, and you're like, what just happened? And he comes back, and Bart's like, oh, right, I'm totally from that time period. And you're like, what? And then they go to that time period, and the way the place that they go to is the vacuum of space. And so you're like, Bart, you're from the vacuum of space? And in this vacuum, because they're basically outside of Legion World. So they're floating in space. And there's a bunch of brightly colored people. One of them is named Karate Kid. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
How is your name Karate Kid? What is that even? What? And so it's just mind-blowingly confused. And then Bart's like, oh, hey, it's my cousin. You're like, you have a cousin that's in the
and
future?
And
yeah, and she's not. Yeah, exactly. You have a black cousin. It's like from the future. It's like, what is going on here? And then there's this green guy, and he is so mean. And he's so abrasive. And you're like, these people. And then they're all really like working really well together. And at the 10th, the Teen Titans are kind of like don't really have their stuff together. And you're just kind of like, I don't. What is going on? Also, then on top of that, the villains that they use are the Fatal Five times 100.
Oh, the Fatal 500.
So imagine like not knowing what the Legion is and then being tossed into that.
With 500 villains.
So I was just really just livid with this book for just dumping all like literally 500 plus new characters on me and like no sort of like preparation whatsoever. And so that was like the first time I was like, these guys are jerks. I hope they get out of my comic. What is going on?
Right there, that's the difference between boys and girls, because I would have read that and went, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Because you start doing that cost per hero ratio.
Yeah, totally.
But
500 villains? Sure.
But we won't get into that.
Different varieties, but still.
But we won't get into that because I promised Adriana that there would be no math.
Oh, that's true.
Well, I don't even think it's that. I think it's that there's different types of readers, and some readers, American comic book readers are kind of known for being really enchanted with minutiae.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think
no.
Yeah, well, especially in the Legion is kind of like the holy grail of like minutiae.
I describe our podcast to non-comic book readers as the nerdiest section of nerd porn. When it comes to nerdy comic book readers, Legion, we run like the nerdiest, the deep end of the nerd pool.
Right. And so, but there's also another type of like reader that I don't know if you guys have ever read the book, the Tipping Point.
Yes.
But okay. Well, in the book, they kind of talk about how Sesame Street was made and the way that people interact with media and educational things or pretty much anything is like, when you're watching something and then you get to a certain point where you don't understand so much that you don't want it anymore. So it's like, I think the majority of readers are like that, honestly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the people are kind of like the people that really, really like to really be immersed in the minutiae of things. And unfortunately, I'm kind of like the former and with a bit of the latter thrown in. It depends. It's like I have to like kind of pick and choose the things to be crazy about, if
sure.
that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's like you guys probably are not crazy about every single thing, but the Legion is your thing, you know, that you're super into and you super know all the stuff about.
Oh,
but,
not me.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I should be on your show, except for not being a girl
at
all.
You are fairly refreshing, like for someone like the person that also doesn't know what's going on. Yes.
I'm refreshing.
Thank you.
That's what we call him too.
Mm-hmm. So
that has no clue. We love him.
So that was my first introduction to Legion, which was not good, and I really disliked Brainiac 5. I didn't even understand who he was, but I just knew.
Well, see, that means you're a fan of Brainiac 5. That
now I am. I am probably the biggest fan of Brainiac 5 in the universe. I can't think of.
Ooh.
Yeah, I would. I'd probably fight someone under a waterfall for that title.
Ooh.
So, no, I don't. I don't mean that. I mean like Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty.
Oh no! I knew that's what I knew right. exactly what right. you meant.
And I would watch that video on YouTube.
I should clear up right now that I am not an attractive female, so it's just picture a lumberjack.
No, I just like people fighting in waterfalls.
Oh, you do? Okay.
It's a thing, you know.
I do too.
We have a group.
They have t-shirts.
This is the one that got me into the Legion, like actually got me into it because of the cartoon. Because I was kind of like, I don't understand this cartoon. Like, and I was kind of sore because Teen Titans was canceled. I'm like, I don't understand what this Legion thing is. And I think I think a problem with the cartoon also is that they didn't actually explain what people's powers were very clearly at the beginning. And you because also didn't get...
There's no caption. There's no captions in the cartoons. That's
true. They also don't explain like how the Legion was founded until way, way, way later.
Yeah, and, that's true. That's true.
So I was very confused, but Kristen was like, wait a second. There's this little robot, and she knows I like robots, like, a lot.
Ah, see?
Yes. And so Brainiac 5 was, like, my perfect combination of, like, I was, like, sad robot and genius. And also a healthy dose of homoeroticism in that cartoon. That really, homoeroticism.
I'm all for that. I'm all like, for that. So.
Like, little shocking. Dude having a crush on Superman, and I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he had more than a crush. That was a full-on bromance.
Yeah, that was definitely a bromance.
It would have been if Superboy had any clue whatsoever.
Yeah, he has
that's
no idea.
That's part of his charm. Come on now.
Yeah.
He's so naive.
Yes.
Exactly.
Farm boys.
I love farm boys. Mm.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Oh, sorry. What? What were we talking about? Legion? What? Okay. I'm back.
Oh, Darren, shiny things. So the cartoon is what is what brought you into Legion. Which is awesome because that is you know that's one of the things people sort of talk about is you know you can get all these things that come out but do they actually bring anyone to the source material? And
really,
so,
I think the reason that you know X-Men I would say are more successful than the Legion is because I mean they have movies and stuff. Is because of that cartoon. Mm-hmm. Literally, I think it's the cartoon because I can talk to anyone and they know who Wolverine is.
Yeah, the cartoon was pretty huge. Now, admittedly, the title was a pretty big deal even before that. But
Right.
But
I
still,
think that I was like as a child growing up, like people in my generation, I definitely know for a fact that the only reason that they know things about the X-Men is because of that cartoon. Literally,
yeah.
Like, that is, and then after that, they kept making, like, every generation, every few years, they make a new X-Men cartoon.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's true. Yeah, it's true. There's been at least three,
Yeah, there's three. Yeah. Or four, actually, technically four.
Ah.
Yeah.
And, right, because there's the Evolution one as well, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I was on Amazon.com, you know what they're calling one of Wolverine and the X-Men's series?
Oh,
Final Crisis.
Right.
There's your irony tool for the day.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Does Wolverine sing?
I was just like, what the? No wonder it didn't make any sense. It's a Marvel story. Okay.
Oh, my. So you said that you are the world's biggest Brainiac 5 fan.
Probably.
Okay.
Now I'm terrified you'll ask me some questions, and then I'll.
I'm gonna ask you. I'm just gonna ask
I love Brainiac 5 so much.
What is it about him?
There's different things that different types of characters that I really like, and I think people that are really capable, but that have like really intelligent. Like kind of like the Sherlock Holmes model sort of person, where they're very, very intelligent but socially awkward, is I think really a character archetype that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Like even in like Star Trek: The Next Generation, I really like Data, and so that's also a robot. So sad robots. Are
really?
Thing. Yeah.
I thought he just had a skin condition.
So
I gotta watch those again.
So I think in that I really like that sort of social awkward thing. Ooh. I also like even in like the early iteration of him is like kind of he's very internally he's very like the fact that his ancestor was the evil Brainiac really affects him. Like mm-hmm. even in the very early issues with him, they make it a point to have him say this over and over again to some kind of crazy degree where no one will be talking about it. Like, I'm really sorry, guys, that my ancestor was so evil. Like we are not talking about that right now. But
but he's always got to bring it up.
He's always bringing it up. It's like it's really sort of like touching that he is really internalized that guilt mm-hmm. from his ancestor, and he really wants to make good. And mm-hmm. so every iteration of Brainiac 5 has those like elements in him, and those are things that I really like about him. So that kind of character archetypes, he like does every archetype that I like, he's kind of in there and does that thing.
And it's interesting because that's kind of evolved over the different versions. And I find if anything, of all the characters showing up right now in the Levitt's Legion book, he seems to be the one who has sort of borrowed a little bit from each of those previous reboots, you know. And it's you know, he's very much the accumulation of all those, because, you know, that the haughtiness that he has. You know, just that sort of disdain for anyone who's wasting his time. You know, I mean, when Levitz was writing him previously, that's not the way he was writing him.
Right. And he was sort of like he was kind of a sweetheart before.
Exactly.
I was surprised that they brought that Levitz, you know, decided to go with Jerkface Brainiac 5. I like Jerkface Brainiac 5, but I also liked sort of sweet and very sad Brainiac 5 as well. Yeah, I was very surprised.
Well, Brainy did have a little touch of insanity back in the day. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, but he got better fast.
Yeah. I forgive him. Until they did a new headquarters or something. And then, well.
He's the only one who knows how any of their stuff works, so they give him a pass.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting where you sort of drew the comparison to Sherlock Holmes, because I hadn't really thought of it that way before. But you're right. I mean, it is that sort of the wisdom coupled with that complete social awkwardness and that inability to really relate to people on the same level.
And I think a lot of comic book fans are nerdy. They kind of have that stigma of being socially awkward or feeling left out or whatever. And I think that appeals to a lot of fans in general. I think he's one of the more popular Legionnaires.
See also Monk. See also Dr. House.
Exactly. Yes.
Absolutely.
House, who is basically Sherlock Holmes.
Obviously.
Totally.
This stuff works.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. 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 Exactly. And yeah, that's kind of a popular trope these days. With Brainy, it's like you say, he's kind of a cross between Sherlock Holmes and he's like the Legion's Q as well. So
right, exactly. Yes.
Q.
From James Bond.
Oh, Q as in Q.
So Dr. Sheldon Cooper would be the humorous Brainiac 5.
Yes.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And let's face it, you know, Brainiac 5 is not that far from, you know, at any point he could say worst issue ever.
I also like that he's almost like, I think there is the sort of, he has like kind of the trappings of a bad guy, where you have they love having bad guys that are super geniuses.
Yes.
Like Lex Luthor, for example, and Brainiac are geniuses.
Yeah.
And I think, and also like the disconnect from people around them, like there's always that kind of like scare, and as you mentioned, like his tendency to go a little bit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think people like that sort of like
tension.
Yeah, tension that he might at some point.
Is this going to be the issue he flips out?
Yes.
Let's find out.
He's a lab accident away from being a supervillain.
Right, exactly.
And let's face it, he wouldn't have to change his costume because he's already rocking the supervillain purple and green.
That's true.
Correct. Yes.
Right? True.
See, he's already there. So, yeah.
He just needs an eye patch and a goatee.
Oh. Yes. Well, I sense an adult Legion story coming, man.
Indeed, indeed.
Like bow chicka bow bow?
No.
Oh. Different adult Legion story. Got it.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's how you came to enjoy the Legion. Now you mentioned that what are some of the things that you've tackled on your show as far as sort of themes that have shown up in the Legion?
We don't have themes. Well, we do kind of note whenever they murder a robot, like a robot that seems pretty sentient. We kind of talk about that. We talk about when they use tunnels, which is very frequently. We talk about when there's lots of statues. Well, a lot of it is like the writers kind of keep going back to the wells of like I was just saying with the cartoon, had that problem where I didn't know. I didn't know what powers these children had, because Saturn Girl, nothing in her name tells you what her power is.
It's true.
Like,
it's true.
It's like, she's got pink wavy lines. What is she doing? So, and yeah, she has, it's like, can she throw Saturns? I don't know what she does.
Is she Pepe Le Pew? What's going on over there?
Like, what is, it's very confusing, but, the thing with the statues is they use the statues to tell you what those people's powers are, basically. And so we always like laugh because they seem to have like have no reason to like the statues are different every time they appear.
They are all the time.
Yeah. They have a wide range of statues. They have like small ones. They have maquettes. They have like tiny ones that are sort of like more doll size. They have like giant. They have a street that is filled with statues.
I was just going to say, sometimes they're in their headquarters, sometimes they're outside. Is there just like is there a huge industry that has cropped up in the wake of the Legion's formation where tons of people are employed to just model statues after the Legion?
We have theorized that to get part of being in the Legion is that you also have to be good at making statues. In one issue, I'm not even kidding. There's one issue where Tinya visits Supergirl, and she's like, I made you this statue of yourself. Of course, she makes it out of, like, red kryptonite because she's an idiot. But,
like, See, listeners, you heard it here. Tinya's an idiot. She should never, ever be Legion president.
Did you read that recent issue where she's talking to, like, Colossal Boy, and she, like, doesn't know what religion he is? It's like, come on, lady.
We're not even on the same team as him.
And Darren here is trying to tell me that she should lead the Legion.
Should be the leader of the Legion. If me.
Duh. I'm with you, babe. That's ridiculous.
Anyways, she said that she made
so
the statue,
good to have so sensible people on the show
all the time.
Well, she was young back then. You never made a mistake at 14. Oh, forget that question. I know you've made mistakes in your 30s. So
she's not that old.
That was for Scott.
He's, he's talking
guest,
to you.
Talking to you, monkey man.
Oh, it's your monkey man.
You see how mean they are to me here? I'm defecting. I'm going to your team.
And you love it, and you know it, you do.
Oh, my. So, What have you been thinking about the new series? Because I know you guys focus a lot on Silver Age Legion, and I think a lot of these things we need to add into the drinking game. Really, I mean, especially the statue thing.
Can you really drink that much more, Paul? Honestly,
it's true. Already like going to be checked into the Betty Ford Clinic. We're done with
I know I have a hard time getting up in the morning after we podcast. So.
Yeah, there's that.
It's all Darren's
fault. Well, I was telling Scott earlier. I don't really. I think people already know that we guessed it on like major spoilers a bit ago, and we talked about the very first issue.
Right.
And my opinion hasn't changed that much, unfortunately. Like I just don't feel the new Legion. It's really sad. Like listening to your guys. I listened to you guys like talk about the first issue. You guys are so happy and so into it. So I feel really bad. like talking about it. But yeah, it just didn't. I had a lot of problems with the new iteration of it, and I haven't had problems with the last iteration of it. But it's fine. I mean, the thing with the Legion is like, if you just wait long enough, you'll get a new Legion. It'll be fine.
That's true.
I don't feel as enraged as I did during Shooter's Run.
All right. Let's talk about that. Like, what is it specifically about this one? And then let's move on to Shooter's Run. But what is it specific? What are the specific problems that you have with this?
Okay.
With this
I have to like say first of all that I haven't been buying most of the issues. I bought like a couple issues here and there. Just like I'll be like, okay, I'll try it now.
Right.
And then it's like, no, still, because I'm a big proponent of not buying things that I don't like. I know that a lot of, I think there's a big problem with like comics is that people feel like, well, I can't really criticize it. I have to buy the comic because I want to talk, I want to like criticize it, you know?
Because so I want to like, bitch about it.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, I had I'm always like angry at my little friends that are like, I can't buy this comic. So I'm like, well, why did you buy it? Then don't buy
yeah.
it.
Yeah, no, it's a good point.
Don't buy it. So, also like I was having financial troubles and I try to like keep myself from buying things even if they enrage me. Well, especially if they enrage me. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's a good reason to drop. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I think I was just talking to Scott about, there's like a lot of things that are in it that, I'll say the big overarching things and then I can talk about smaller things. So mm-hmm. I think in general terms, I think that, some of the basic premises that the Legion's operating on, like some of the really big cruxes of the story, like story that are going, like for example, Earthman.
Yeah.
Like I don't,
he's awesome.
I think I have a problem with, like, I was like, why are you here? Like, it's very kind of basic, like, get out. Like, no, you don't get to have two rings. And like, no, you don't get one ring. You sure as heck don't get two rings. And what? So there's like that basic premise is problematic for me. And then,
you started talking English there and then it completely lost you.
Scott's
having a bromance with Earthman. It's okay.
So there's like I think another basic premise is that the interaction between the team members, okay, well, if you're going to do an older team instead of doing the younger team, I don't think that you can insert kind of like weird drama that makes it seem like they should be really closely knit. We should be seeing like really kind of people understanding each other. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, because they've been knowing each other for so many years. They've been fighting crazy. They've been toddlers before. So it's like, do you remember that time when we were all babies? Do you remember that time when we all turned into, we all switched minds or something? Like, it's, they've been through the craziest things that you can possibly imagine. And I just think that, you know, it's just really hard to wrap my mind around, like, these people having these certain conflicts and kind of misunderstanding each other in the ways that they are. Like, so there's that. And also, I think that Levitz's writing style is something that I'm just not feeling. I'm sorry.
No, but hey, everyone, different things appeal to different people. You know, I mean, that's the, you know, if everybody liked the same thing, then all we would get is the same thing.
Yeah. So I think you guys, I mean, a lot of the things that I think I had problems with, a lot of other readers really find attractive. Like, I like decompressed storytelling. I like really slow sort of like, I like more images versus text.
Mm-hmm.
To disclose, I'm also like a comic book artist person. Like, I'm also an artist person. So it's, I kind of come from this from a different standpoint than, I think other people like read comics. I'm really super staring at things and I get bothered by certain things that I think most readers do not even care about. So yeah, also take whatever I'm saying with a grain of salt. Nobody cares about the insanity of things that I see that I can't believe the kerning on this panel. Like, I don't think other people notice those things. So, so there's that. So that's like kind of the general things that I have with it. I can also talk about specific things, but I don't know how happy you want to be at the end of this.
Well, I think that there's a big thing going on here that, I mean, you are much younger than we are.
Yes. I mean, assume so.
We are very, very old.
Maybe not much younger than Matt, but you're definitely younger than the rest of us.
How old are all of you?
We're old.
Like the hills.
Oh, I'm 25. Let's say that.
Okay. So you're definitely younger than all of us.
You're the baby in the room. That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Once again, I'm not the youngest.
There you go, Matt. There you go.
Eat it, Grandpa. So, yeah, but the thing of that is, I mean, because you came to it from such a different place than we did.
Yes.
Like, we all came in with Levitz Giffen.
Yeah. Right.
That's our intro. So, I mean, obviously, that's going to have a lot more power, even just on a nostalgic level.
Right. I definitely see the, like, nostalgic. I read, like, the Supergirl annual. Supergirl annual. And what I read that as like was like, oh, this is like not for me, because although like it seemed like every single page mm-hmm. was it was basically like a giant nostalgia porn like picture like comic. I think yeah. that every single it wasn't really there was kind of no real story in there. It was kind of just like she goes to the past and has an adventure, like kind of, and then they kind of sort of try to get like a Brainiac 5 and her thing going, but it's kind of like, wait, why did they, what? Like, because it's kind of like not very convincing to me on an emotional level, but mm-hmm, on mm-hmm. every single page, I was like, oh, well, this is supposed to be a reference to this, and this is a reference to this, and this is a reference I don't even understand. So it was kind of like, I absolutely understand why, like, Levitt's run appeals to readers of a certain type.
Yeah.
And I also understand why it doesn't appeal to other readers of a different type. It's like, yeah, it's, I can absolutely see like why people find it attractive in that sense.
Right. Now, your comics reading background, where did you first come into comics?
Oh, like since I was born. Like
yeah.
I think it was to, like Scott. Like I like he asked me if I was a Batman fan, and I was like, that's an understatement. Like I was born, and then Batman. Like, I don't know what my parents were doing when I was in the womb, if they were like just, I really don't know, but like ever since I was little, I was like really, really into Batman. Yeah. My father collected comic books. He was more of a Marvel person.
Uh-huh.
And he's really into Thor and stuff like that. And my mm-hmm. older brother was really into like also Batman and like Wolverine. But more like he was more Marvel too. But yeah. I was really into Batman, like crazy Batman, Michael Keaton, like.
Because you would have been like four when that movie came out.
Yeah, whatever. Like age, my brain started being really conscious of things. Just Batman must have been right inside, like right up against my face. It's just
yeah.
I just really deeply programmed into my mind is like I watched Batman Returns like every couple days. It's like I'm psychotic. So I got into comics like just by being really into Batman. Mm-hmm. Again, Batman cartoon like just made me crazier for Batman.
That
cartoon. The reason I am still like I didn't really read the comics during that time because mm-hmm. it was really dark and confusing time for comics when the cartoon was coming out. Like the best comics at the time were literally they had like Ty Templeton and like Paul Dini and like stuff writing the comics for the animated cartoon.
Oh yeah, and you had like awesome. And you had like Mike Parabek drawing them. Seriously.
They are like masterpieces of like the some of the best Batman comics I've ever read are those comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I was like, and they even have gay people in them.
Like, yeah.
What?
Well, I mean,
no one knew about Montoya back then.
No. I'm talking about Poison Ivy and Harley.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they kind of like dance around the issue a lot.
Yeah, right. It's a coded couple.
But there is there's an issue of like Batman Adventure, like one of the comics, based on the cartoon, where Batgirl is interacting with like Harley comes to Batgirl and she like needs some help because these guys have got Poison Ivy and she's like, oh my god, they've got Ivy, and Batgirl is talking to her and she's like, oh, aren't you worried about like Poison Ivy like poisoning you? And Harley says, no, Ivy gave me like some kind of vaccine so that we can play. And she says, so that we can play. And Batgirl says, oh, are you two? And then she and Harley's like, what? And Batgirl's like, are you guys like, and Harley's like, what? And Batgirl's, she like crosses her fingers at her. And Harley's like, you mean what everyone says about you and Supergirl? And then they get interrupted. But I mean, just that, like, if you're like a little kid, you probably don't know what they're talking about. But at the time, I was like, oh my God, they're talking, she's asking her if she's a lesbian. And I was like, oh, thank you for remembering that gay people exist and that kind of thing. Uh-huh. That's just like something, I don't even think they would have done that in the like actual, like, mainstream, like, American, like, DC comic. Real Batman issues at the time.
That's interesting. Yeah. The, you know, because it's one of those things where they talk about these, you know, like these sort of quote unquote all ages lines. Right.
Yes.
And the you know, again, the common myth, as we've talked about many times on the show, is that sort of common myth that all ages equals for kids. Right. Right. When really it actually equals all ages. Right. Yeah. And it's interesting that you almost wonder if they get away with that because there isn't the same sort of exactly. oversight as there yes. is, you know, because with the regular Batman comic, let's face it. Like, that's how Diamond determines its sales numbers, is exactly. based on how Batman sells, right?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so you know, that is definitely the, you know, the jewel in the DC Comics crown. Right. And so they look at that, and so I think the oversight is more there, and they're like, oh yeah, the kids stuff, you guys handle that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I want, yeah. you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we see series, you know, come and go constantly on that side of things, and you, right. you kind of think, ah, it's a shame because it's often great comics. You know, right. I mean, you look at what they were doing on the Legion in the 31st Century book,
yes.
and yes. you know, I mean, it's like, you know, Jack and Alex and Jay Torres and everyone that was yeah. they were doing some great
one,
comics.
One
over
of the
there.
Best Legion comics I've ever read was from that Legion of Superheroes in the 31st Century.
Uh-huh.
Issue where they it has Saturn Girl on the cover. I want to say it's like number 7 or something. She it's like her being the others kind of go off on to like go to like a game or something. They go to go do something, and Saturn Girl gets like left with monitor duty. And I don't know if you guys remember this. So she gets left with monitor duty, and then Lightning Lad stays behind. And he says, oh, I didn't want to, like, ditch you and leave you low. And then the Fatal Five break in. And so Saturn Girl kind of, like, has to handle stuff on her own for a bit. And also Garth's there also helping her. And they get, like, trapped in, like, a locker.
Uh-huh.
They have, like, kind of, like, a cute sort of romantic moment where it's a little bit, like, awkward that they're very close to one another. It's very cute. And then they get out of it. And then Validus is there. Validus, okay, Validus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Imra versus yeah. Validus. And she, like, puts her hand on, like, Validus's head and is, like, and like, tells him that it was, like, oh, you're very warm and you're falling asleep. She basically puts Validus to sleep. She puts Validus to sleep very gently. And then Garth says, oh, you'd make a really good mom. it's like fulfills like every kind of like oh my god, I know what's going on here, like sort of feeling.
See,
but it's
there's that minutia like, stuff coming up again, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. It's like, but it fulfills like your need for minutia, but at the same time, it's a very sweet story of like mm-hmm. of like you seeing like what Garth finds attractive in her, and you know she can also find something very attractive in Garth, is that he's thoughtful enough to come back for her. And so it's like, oh, it's kind of crappy that you get stuck on monitor duty all alone, and I want to keep you company. Like, that, like, little interaction between the two and, like, the nostalgia reference
yeah.
is so perfect and is so, like, it's probably, like, my favorite issue of the Legion, or it's one of my favorite issues ever because it's just so... it fulfills every single thing that you can do there, and it's so sweet and it's so perfect, and it actually has some kind of like, I buy that as like, oh, if they're going to be a couple, that makes sense. I think they have I think DC in general has like a really hard time showing I don't want to say romance because that sounds like such like a genre term, but I mean like actual character interaction, like heartfelt, like building up, why would these people go out, like kind of figure, like why would Garth, who seems very different from Imra, and why, what would they see in each other, what would make them click? And that issue was just like, and they don't like really do anything at that issue. I don't think they don't kiss or anything, I don't think. They just kind of like have like really kind of awkward cute moment and they're embarrassed, and then you see, oh, they are they see things in each other that they find very attractive. And it's not even based on like sexual, like, oh, she's super hot and he's super hot. It's not even based on that. It's based purely on personality, and it's just a really gorgeous issue. And I really wish more of those things would be in every single issue
yeah,
of comics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it looks like I think the one you're talking about is issue 10, and it's got Saturn Girl on the cover, sort of thought casting, because you can tell because her eyebrows are raised. And
that's what they do.
Yeah, and the art on that is by a friend of the show, Alex Sarah. And it was written by Matthew K. Manning. Mm-hmm. And it's just neat though, because they took that, you know, they took that thing where you've got that story on the surface level that's just a really cool story. Yeah. And then you've got those little details in the background, you know, those little things that that if you know about the whole Validus story, it's a really cool thing, you know, and you get that aha moment as well. And I think that series did a really good job of that, because it was written by people who were real fans of the Legion.
Right. Yes. Definitely.
Mm. And
find bigger fans than Jack, at least.
Oh, seriously. Oh, yeah. Seriously.
Alex as well, but yeah. Definitely Jack.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, that is so I mean, you know, huge fans, and I can only assume by what you've told us about that story that Matthew Manning also a pretty big fan.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, but again, like I say, like, I guess the oversight into those things is a bit different, because you know, and it's interesting, because I mean, we've talked to the guys about that before, about, you know, so doing a licensed comic, you know, like this, is it really difficult? And with this one, they didn't have sort of the issues that a lot of people have with doing licensed comics. Because I just don't think that the powers that be were as concerned, because they're more concerned with the stuff that sells big numbers.
Right.
Yeah, I think
editor editorial. I'm really sometimes I'm just flabbergasted by some because there's so many editors that there's so many people that have their hands on an issue,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll see some really weird mistakes and really strange things that happen, and you're just kind of is anyone editing this? It's kind of frustrating, but it seems like a lot of you know, I know some creative types, and I know that a lot of problems stem from a lot of frustration stems people leave books, and I mean, you guys have interviewed creators before, so I'm sure you recall just getting really you're trying to tell us your story, and then all these other things that contradict the story that you're doing are happening. So I can imagine that being just a really frustrating situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, you know, the classic example is Mark Waid being told, yes. Hey, you get to write yourself a Legion book. And I mean, you know, there's the other really big Legion fan, right? The guy who's right. the one guy who's got the PhD in Legionology. And
I would marry Mark Waid.
See?
There you go, Mark. It's on the table.
but you know, there's a guy who you know, this is a great thing, and he gets to start from scratch, right? He gets to build it all from the ground up, and take a truly different direction on what's going on in the Legion, and then all of a sudden this other thing's going on, and it's like, oh, I guess we're not the big deal.
Right.
You know, and it's and you can see where that'd be frustrating. And it's interesting, because the whole idea of editorial, you know, when you say about mistakes cropping up and stuff, you know, and perhaps he has a bit of a bias, but Alan Moore has noted that, you know, editors aren't really editors anymore. You know, right. It's not like when he was working on say Watchmen with Len Wein editing, or Swamp Thing with Len Wein editing, you know, there was a real collaboration there, and there was sort of a what do you think about this? Well, what if you went this way? Hey, that'd be kind of cool too. But there was also that, you know, but if you really feel strongly about the direction you're taking, you go ahead with that. But there was sort of a real sort of shaping role in that. Yes. Now it seems like he says, you know, they're often just traffic managers, and it's just basically hey, I need your script so I can get it to the artist, and hey, I need your pencil pages so I can get it to the inker, and you know, and it's very much just traffic control, just exactly. Doing what I can to get things out on time, and that's about it. And and to be fair, a lot of them, you know, will have several titles in which they're doing this, and so it it seems that all of a sudden you understand why some of the errors, you know, hey, that balloon's pointing to the wrong guy. And, right. You know,
I'm not even talking about like errors like those. It just feels like an editor should like exactly what you were saying. Like they should be keeping you on track. They're like, wait, why are you talking about this on this page? Like, is this necessary? Trim some of this down. Like, it doesn't seem like they're doing that aspect of it so much oh my God, is the inker on time? Is the colorist on time? What's your name again? Like, kind of like really, exactly. Like a traffic cop sort of problem.
Yeah.
It's because all the artists are so slow these days.
I don't think they are.
If you ask them.
I think that the problem is that I think they should be paid more. Like, if you pay them more, I guarantee they will be fat. I think that most people don't realize, like, it's hard to draw comics. Like,
sure it is.
It's extremely hard. Like, when people were just ragging on, Legion of Three Worlds, Perez, when George Perez was, like, working on that, people were just ragging on, like, I can't believe it's so late. Like, do you realize how hard it, I wouldn't do it. I would not do that comic.
But seriously, I mean,
how much they paid me, I wouldn't do that comic because it's just doing like, I'm like just trying to do like a page with like maybe five characters on a page, remembering what their costumes are. Then you have to do backgrounds that are very detailed. Just think about five characters now times that times a million. And trying to memorize like where everyone goes and what the layout of your scene is, and just like it's a nightmare. I can't imagine having to draw that. And you know, people don't realize how time intensive like drawing a comic is. It's great. It's a 9-to-5 job where you are just waking up and then you're drawing until you pass out, and it's unforgiving. You don't get health care unless you're like an exclusively contract person,
maybe
you don't get health care. You get paid per page.
Yeah.
You get paid. And then like, I don't know what your guys' jobs are, but, I draw for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go home, I also draw. So, my hands are constantly hurting.
Yeah, sure.
I'm 25 and I'm like seriously like kind of worried about the condition of my body and how hard I'm working them. So I think a lot of people, can you imagine like George Perez, he's been like in the business. I can't imagine what his.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, here's a guy who's in his, got to be in at least his fourth decade, right?
Yeah.
At least.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, and let's face it, the guy over the last 20 odd years has really sort of taken on those projects where, hey, how many characters can I stuff onto a page?
Exactly. It was heartbreaking for me that like so many people were so upset that the whatever was late. I was like, you just let him take 5 years to make that comic and you'd be grateful. Like, oh my God, you'd be grateful that it's happening. I just can't even imagine drawing something like that. And the Legion in general, I think, is a difficult thing for artists to draw in general, just because there's many costumes and the setting is so difficult. Futuristic settings are hard in general. Like, they're hard. Yeah. You don't have any reference pictures.
Yeah.
You have nothing. You are, good luck.
You know, we joked with Mike Norton back in when we were in Reading, and we joked with him about, you know, hey Mike, it'd be great if you would draw a Legion comic, you know, because hey, I mean, you know, it'd make it easier for me because I like to buy anything that Mike's working on, and I like to buy Legion comics, and this, you know, double dips. It's like, you know, it's like the Reese's peanut butter cup of comic books for me, right? And but Mike just looked at me like, you have any idea how many characters that is?
Yeah.
And you said yes. Yes, I do.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, it's a daunting thing for an artist, you know, and there's a lot of artists that, that you know, really, really want that challenge. And there's also a lot of artists where it's like, man, you know, I'm pushing myself as it is. And, right. And you know, and it's, and God knows, like Mike at the time was doing sort of, what he was basically doing, an issue and a half a month at the time.
That man is a machine.
Seriously. I mean, and you know, and it comes down to the, like you say, with the work ethic, and it is, and he's always working to streamline his process, mm-hmm. you know, and. But you know, when you get into, you know, the that sort of level, I mean, you know, often these things are solicited before they're before a page has even been written, right?
That's crazy mm-hmm. to me.
Before they even have a script page, and I mean, some of it comes down to with that, you know, is that a nature of the business the way it is now, where because information gets out so quickly. You know, where, hey, we, you know, we can't keep this under wraps because it's going to leak somehow.
Right.
And
I think that the way that labor is divided within American comics is problematic to begin with. I think that, I don't know if you guys know anything about manga at all, like how much manga you read, but the division of labor in Japan is much, much different, much different. Okay. There's usually, well, first of all, it's not in color, so you don't have to worry about a colorist. And frankly, I know that a lot of American comic book fans have a lot of the stigma where if it's not in color, it doesn't seem done, they don't like it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But a lot of actual artists, like, prefer how their art works without color on it because... especially in the American model, you have no choice who your colorist is.
Right.
Unless you're kind of like one of those superstars, you're just screwed. They could get Bob off the street whose coloring is like absolutely nothing like what you're doing. And that goes for inkers too.
No, and it's true, you know, because when you say that.
A stranger on the other side of the planet. I am very lucky in that me and Kristen are like really good friends and we have the same art aesthetic. And we work well together. We still have disagreements. Like we still have, I'm like, I don't know about that color, and she's like, I don't know about this face. And
I don't know about your face. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. And then we fight. But
two
then
girl winter, one girl lead.
Yeah, and it's like I can't imagine like what it must be like if your inker's on one side of the country, your colors is in a different country. And the editor is like trying to corral you together vaguely.
Yeah.
And I just think that's insane. In Japan, what it is is that there's like a main artist. There might be a main writer, but the main writer and the main artist might be the same person. Very frequently, there's just like one person that is both the writer and the artist. And they are the creative mind behind it. So it infuriates me when people are like, I don't know if this artist can write this thing. I will punch you in the face. Like, what are you talking about? Why would I not be able to write? So there's not that stigma of like artists can't be writers and writers can't be artists in Japan. So to begin with, also the division of labor is much different as well. Women. Like it's pretty much half the industry is females,
right?
In Japan, so there's that. On top of that, like, yeah. okay, well, let's put it this way: the second richest person in Japan is a female comic book creator who is both writer and artist.
Crazy talk!
Wow,
that's the second richest person in Japan. So let's, think about that.
That's some perspective. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So that's. That's why young ladies like manga. Okay, so. anyways, that's why I just like love hearing people. Like, I wonder why there are not a lot of female creators that are super into like American comics as much as manga. It's like, well, think about it. So, anyways, so you have the main artist, and underneath them, there will be a bunch of assistants. There might be one or two, and the division of labor is kind of like, usually there might be like an inker and maybe someone that does tone. Mm-hmm. Or, and it depends on how many assistants you have. Like, so I've seen it where, like, sometimes there's a person that does like the background art.
Right.
And it's kind of like, it's kind of like difficult. It's kind of to describe because it's different, because instead of just pigeonholing people into whatever, they go by people's strengths. So, it's, and they're usually living together while they're working on the comic. Like, it'd be like me in my apartment with like two other dudes or ladies, like chilling on my floor. We're just banging pages out like every day. Every day, just like getting up, working, and it's like it's like a communal type thing,
right?
And it's, I don't, you know, it's not really that possible as much in America because, you know, you've got creators on different parts of the country.
Oh, but, sometimes different countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes different countries, and because we're kind of working with like bigger companies where they kind of are these nexuses of creators, and they just kind of dip into their pool and put whoever together.
Right.
You get setups like that. But if you look at like a lot of indie publishers or creators or web comics or like a lot of artists that are just more illustrative artists, like rather than comic book artists or whatever, or even like just like indie people, people that are just not doing stuff with the big two, they have setups like that. They're working with their friends. Like me and Kristen, I'm working with my friend. Like I'm not working with some weird person that an editor shoved me with. I'm working with people that I feel like I'm, I have connection with.
Sure. And yeah. Kind of,
so, I mean, it's like it's problematic in that way. Like the American comics is like, it's worse because like you have these artists and they kind of, we can now look at what Japan is doing and we go there and we're like, oh, I wish I had this kind of feeling. And you get kind of sad.
And it's interesting when you say that about the, like the different teams, because they, I can only think of a couple of examples where there are like, you know, commonly paired up complete art teams, and I'm talking like colorist and artist, you know, penciler, inker, colorist, and that's like what's his name, Steve McNiven with Dexter Vines and Maury Hollowell, and Francis Manipul with Brian Buccellato, and they're, you know, they're guys, they're, those two are guys who've worked together quite a bit, and so they kind of get that whole, you know, as for example, and we heard this when we interviewed Francis a long time back, where he talked about how when he was developing that style, he worked with the colorist to sort of how are we gonna work together to make this come out looking like this kind of thing, and so. You know, that's so rare, because often what ends up happening is it's like, okay, we've got the inked pages. Okay, colorist, you have 2 days to turn this around.
Exactly.
And
exactly what happens.
And so that colorist farms it out to five guys who are going to flat it for him. And then as he gets them back, he renders the pages. And then he moves on to the next book, because he's got like 2 days to turn that damn thing around. Exactly. And so, you know, that's hardly conducive to, you know, that runs completely counter to the, you know, the Manipul Buccellato model of, you know, we're going to really work hard at this process and get it looking a certain way, because there it's just like move widgets. And I'm not saying that those guys aren't talented, but you know, the guys who are doing like, turn it around in 2 days aren't talented, because they are very talented. I mean, they do some great work, especially when you consider the timeline, the ridiculous timelines under which they work.
That's kind of the nature of independent versus mass market too. I mean, just on the whole. So I see kind of mass market, the deadline is the deadline, well, most of the time. And then independent, you have a little more leeway with some of your more quirkier titles. I think Buffy and Star Wars come out fairly regularly.
Right.
But beyond that, you know, bi-monthly is good, quarterly is good, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a on the month, on the same week as last month kind of a schedule. Meanwhile, DC and Marvel have schedules to keep. So there you go.
I think like the weekly model, I mean the monthly model is kind of, it's really hard to sell to like a modern market. I mean, especially because they haven't really gotten their act together with their digital stuff yet.
Right.
It's really hard to like, well, I'm okay. Let's just talk about price point. Like, American comics are like, if you buy a trade, okay, let's say that I want to read whatever, but I don't really want to go into the comic book store every month or whatever to get that issue. I want a trade. Well, they might not release the trade right after the issue's finished. Actually, right. They don't usually. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll release a hardcover months after, and then a year, maybe a year and a half, they'll release a trade paperback that's reasonably priced for you.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, and that trade is like only what, like 120 pages usually.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can get like a manga that's 200 pages for $10. They're all usually $10, maybe 13 tops, and they're twice as long. And so it's really hard to like convince someone. It's like, no, maybe you should try this thing. It's like, this is really expensive. And this story that I'm reading is from 3 years ago. That's crazy. Like, it's really, really hard to like introduce new people. Why am I talking about this?
I have no clue.
That's what we do. We have tangents, and we.
Oh yeah, it's all about the tangents. I mean, it's because this all came down to you know where you started getting into comics. Then we started talking creative process in there.
Right.
You know I'll be honest with you.
I faded it out about a half an hour ago. I went, made a sandwich, came back. You guys are still going to talk.
Hey, it happens. It happens. We're all about tangents, so you're in good company here, Adriana.
This is why my show is very structured to keep us away from this.
Structure.
Ah.
Yeah, we don't have that. Although we are going to have to bug out soon, Polly.
Yeah. Actually, we're going to have to wrap up in a few minutes. But so you mentioned your drawing. What are some of the things that you're working on? Is there anything that people can find somewhere?
Yes. Me, Kristen and I are working on two comics, the first issues of which you can buy, but you can also just read them online. The printed issues have like extra stuff in the back, like sketches and like extra comic-y things.
Secret
codes? Comic,
yeah. Well, actually, technically, one of the comics is called Stop, and that's about a little mercenary team in the future. And you can look that up at stopthecomic.com.
Hmm. Do they in fact have a sad robot?
Actually, yeah, kind of. Like there are people that definitely fit that archetype of the things that we like. And so the other comic is about it's called Minor Acts of Heroism, and it's about these like little boys and they're, well, right now it's like about the two little boys, but it's really about like sidekicks, kind of like younger, like the younger versions of these heroes. They're like the adults in their lives are superheroes, and it's about the kind of relationship between the little sidekicks.
I believe they like to be called hero support now.
Yeah, hero support. And
that's what Power Girl calls her bra.
Hey now.
So you can, that's minoractsofheroism.com, and you can read that. And you can also buy the first issue if you want. It's the first collected little issue of all the pages if you just like click the store. Cool. And that's what we work on after work. And our actual work is like we work for a little MMO doing character design.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's one of those computer things, huh?
Yeah, like...
It's okay. Someone passed Grandpa his Tyrannosaurus.
My video gaming started and ended with Street Fighter 2, so... I don't care.
See, I was going to get Pong, but, you know.
That was a little before my time, Grandpa.
Oh, silly me.
Very cool. Hey, this awesome. This stock comic looks really cool.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, let's all just read it. How about that?
I just went to the link because I wanted to check it out.
And then we'll talk about it later.
And of course, the show, Super Future Friends.
Oh, yes, the show.
Superfuturefriends.blogspot.com. Is there anything that you've got coming up that you can tell us about?
No. We're kind of we're trying to work really hard on the comics, so our show is kind of in and out. Every time I'm like, Kristen, we should record, and she's like, we should thumbnail pages you, and I'm like, oh, right, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
And then they fight under a waterfall.
Exactly. Yeah, because I thought for a second, it's like, wow, so she talks just like Edward G. Robinson. Yeah, see?
Yeah.
Well, it was a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
And welcome. You're welcome back.
Thank you.
Anytime
at
all.
I'm sorry about last time. I just really am such an idiot. I feel so bad about that.
Oh, no worries.
I'm so sorry.
They don't know about last time.
Well, I do now.
Sorry.
It was all secret.
Oh, God. We totally didn't out you.
Even I can get stood up by a woman. See how that happens? Wow.
Alrighty then. So let's wrap this up. So comments, as always, are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can head over to the forum at forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com and join the conversation there. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. We are also on the Facebook. We are Legion of Substitute Podcasters. You put that in the little search box. Guess who's going to show up? That's right, us. And you can also head over to our website, that is at legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and you can leave a comment on this very episode or any other episode as you so desire. And with that, we head back into the time bubble and make our way back to the 21st century, and we will see you all next week.
Woo-hoo. Woo-hoo.